It is 6 hours Universal Time. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Howard Lesser in Washington, and here is the news, starting with our top Africa stories for Thursday, March 25th. In the headlines, Nigeria's acting president releases names of cabinet nominees. A rights group accuses Ethiopia of punishing opponents ahead of May elections. And Ugandan rebels kill at least 9 in the Central African Republic. Good morning. Nigeria's acting president, Goodluck Jonathan, has unveiled a partial list of cabinet nominees after he dismissed his entire cabinet last week. Senate President David Mark read the names of the 33 cabinet nominees yesterday without saying who would take what position. The Senate must now vet the nominees. The list includes just 9 holdovers from the old cabinet, including former Information Minister Dora Akunyili, a key supporter of Mr. Jonathan. New faces include a nephew of ailing President Umaru Yar'Adua, Muttalib Yar'Adua, and a London-based managing director for financial firm Goldman Sachs, Olusegun Aganga. Yesterday's announcement won mixed reviews from executive director Innocent Chukwuma of the pro-democracy group The Clean Foundation.
It's a very tight cabinet that will be results-oriented, focused on delivering the goods, and hoping that through delivering results, people will welcome the government more. But what it has done, which is born out of fear, is this feeling that unless you pander to the whims and caprices of old politicians, that they will not give him a space to operate, which is very disappointing.
President Yar'Adua technically remains in office, but has not been seen in public since falling seriously ill in late November. A rights group says Ethiopia's government is systematically punishing political opponents ahead of the May parliamentary elections. Human Rights Watch says the ruling EPRDF party has used its power to deny jobs, credit, and farming supplies to members of opposition groups. Speaking to journalists in Nairobi, Human Rights Watch Africa Director Georgette Gagnon accused the government of creating a climate of fear and oppression in the run-up to May elections.
Ethiopians, millions of them, are unable to speak freely, organize political activities, challenge their government's policies, either through peaceful protest, voting, or publicizing their views without fear of reprisal.
Last month, Ethiopia's government began jamming Voice of America's Amharic language broadcasts to the country. Ugandan rebels have attacked villages in the southeastern Central African Republic, killing at least 9 civilians. Local officials and witnesses say Lord's Resistance Army rebels attacked the village of Agumar and at least one other locality on Sunday. Uganda's Daily Monitor newspaper quotes a Ugandan military spokesman, Felix Kulayigye, as saying the LRA killed 9 people and abducted 13. The Central African Republic may postpone its presidential and legislative elections scheduled for next month. Electoral sources say a delay in the electoral process is to blame for the postponement, which has yet to be officially announced. Elections were originally slated for April 25th, with campaigning set to begin April 12th. Scientists have discovered what they believe could be a new human ancestor that left Africa a million years ago and traveled at least as far as southern Siberia before disappearing. A team of European researchers decoded the genetic material from an unidentified hominid that lived in Siberia about 40,000 years ago and concluded that it might be a new branch of the human family tree. The discovery raises the possibility that there might have been several waves of migration out of Africa of evolving hominids. The work was published yesterday in the journal Nature. On the world scene, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the U.S. Middle East envoy George Mitchell engaged in closed-door talks yesterday aimed at easing a bilateral dispute that has threatened Israeli-Palestinian peace negotiations. The two men met in Washington a day after the Israeli leader held talks at the White House with President Barack Obama. U.S. and Pakistani officials say the first day of the U.S.-Pakistan strategic dialogue at the ministerial level in Washington has succeeded in creating a broader, more sustainable partnership. The FBI and U.S. Capitol Police have briefed congressional Democrats on safety concerns following a number of recent threats linked to a controversial vote on health care legislation. And U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates says that as more troops arrive in Afghanistan and become part of the new U.S. strategy, more low-level Taliban fighters are surrendering to Afghan authorities. That's news at 5 past the hour. Good morning. It's time for Daybreak Africa from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Howard Lesser in Washington, and on our program for March 25th...
I'm not satisfied because there are some old ones coming back. What is the reason of including those former ministers to serve? They should bring new ones, all.
That's Abuja-based Nigerian political commentator Idris Aliyu commenting on the makeup of the new Nigerian cabinet just unveiled by acting President Goodluck Jonathan. We'll have a report. Also, renegade ruling party officials in Botswana accuse President Ian Khama of dictatorial behavior and vow to form an opposition coalition to unseat him. The Deputy Speaker of Liberia's House of Representatives urges greater implementation of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's final report. And Kenya welcomes the reaffirmation of an ivory ban on neighboring Tanzania. Later, we'll bring you the World Health Organization's latest assessment of a rising number of cases of drug-resistant tuberculosis around the world. Besides all that, Mark Ouma will have a sports report. Nigeria's acting president, Goodluck Jonathan, has nominated 33 members of a new Nigerian cabinet. Senate President David Mark yesterday read the names of the 33 ministerial nominees submitted for approval. From the capital, Abuja, reporter Gilbert Da Costa tells us the list includes 9 members of the outgoing cabinet.
A spokesman for acting president, Goodluck Jonathan, has said last week's removal of all government ministers was designed to inject fresh blood and bring even greater vigor to governance. But an Abuja-based political commentator, Idris Aliyu, says the proposed ministers do not reflect an intent to bring greater efficiency and a commitment to improved governance.
What the active president said, he wants to inject fresh blood to contribute their own quota toward the development of Nigeria. I'm not satisfied because there are some old ones coming back. What is the reason of including those former ministers to serve? They should bring new ones, all.
Goodluck Jonathan, late Tuesday, sent to the Senate the names of 33 proposed ministers for a cabinet to replace the one he dissolved last week. 9 members of the outgoing cabinet, including former Deputy Oil Minister Odin Ajumogobia, Attorney General Tukumbo Kayode, and Information Minister Dora Kunyile, are on the list. A close relation of ailing President Umar Yar'Adua is among the new nominees. The nominees are expected to appear before the Senate, which will screen and confirm them. Gilbert De Castro for the VOA News, Abuja.
And the time on Daybreak Africa is 8 minutes past the hour. A group of top officials from the ruling Botswana Democratic Party have vowed to form a new party and join an opposition coalition after accusing President Ian Khama of dictatorial tendencies and resentment toward dissenting views. Sidney Pilane, a leading member of the splinter group, said President Khama's authoritarianism is undermining Botswana's democratic efforts. Members of the splinter group, known as Barata Party, include 6 current members of parliament and a special advisor to ex-president Festus Mohai. Pilane tells reporter Peter Clotty that President Khama is vehemently opposed to dissenting views within the ruling BDP party.
You know, since the current president took over, we have watched with growing apprehension his style of leadership. It's tended to be too military, too authoritarian. We have a great fear that our democracy is declining at so rapid a pace. We do not think that we'll have much of it left in not too long a time. Our civil liberties are being eroded, and the rule of law is under great risk.
Sydney, supporters of your former party or soon-to-be former party are saying you are just disgruntled and the chances of your party succeeding is almost negligible.
I cannot expect them to say anything else. Instead of engaging the issues, they will find excuses for explaining our departure from them. At our meeting held on Saturday, which the decision to debunk was made, we agreed a list of concerns and remedies to those concerns. We took those to him. His response to them was to issue a press statement in which he said they were outrageous, untenable, and impracticable. He branded us as dissidents and he threatened us with discipline, which is a typical response that you must expect from him whenever you express a concern.
Sidney Pilane is a former special advisor to Botswana's former president, Mohai. The chairman of the ruling party denies President Khama is undermining Botswana's democracy. Daniel Kwelahobe says that President Khama believes in democracy and has fully embraced its tenets.
I don't think he is governing the party like a military man. I think he is running the government within the framework of the Botswana Constitution. And within the Botswana Constitution, if people are not satisfied, they are allowed to air their views, either directly to the president, or they can air their views in public anywhere.
But they are saying that whenever they do that, they are brandished and threatened with sanctions.
I know they have complained that the president doesn't make room for them to see him. I've talked to the president about that concern, and he has said that they haven't asked to see him. They know his phone number, and they can ring him anytime if he has time. Able to see that.
Botswana media has reported that the party is on the brink of disintegration because of this confusion. Is there a crisis in the ruling party?
Well, I think there are concerns within the party. I don't know whether I can classify it as a crisis, but certainly there are people who are unhappy with the way the party is being run, and that, of course, they are entitled to their views.
Daniel Kwelahobe, the chairman of Botswana's ruling Democratic Party, the BDP. He was speaking with reporter Peter Claudy from the capital, Habarone. Daybreak time is 12 minutes past the hour. The deputy speaker of Liberia's House of Representatives says President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf should take serious steps to begin implementing recommendations of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's final report. This comes after the president sent the national legislature a two-page report on what she describes as her compliance with the law creating the TRC. According to the act establishing the Truth Commission, the president is mandated to report to the national legislature within 90 days of the investigation on its implementation. But Deputy Speaker Tukpa Molba tells reporter James Butty the report submitted by President Sirleaf doesn't come close to addressing the Truth Commission final report's many recommendations.
Some members of us, we have a serious, serious concern about what in the letter. If you read the letter, if you understand the letter, is that actually addressing the full implementation of the TRC report? In our discussion with the head of state, we are saying clearly, we represent the people of Liberia. And somehow we are coming up clearly that we have to respect the report. And what we think is that if the president is giving a report, the report should be clear and address the corn of the Liberian people in general, especially the final report.
She has argued here, the president, President Sirleaf, has said that she nominated people to the National Human Rights Commission and that you, the members of the legislature, rejected almost everyone that she nominated. Can you tell us why the members were rejected?
The Liberian Senate can answer that question correctly, but with me, I'm saying that we shouldn't be political, we shouldn't play with the report. We from the legislature, we should come out clearly and write the president and they all come out with a full report on the implementations of the TRC report. We don't want standards that will be set, that certain portion of recommendation for the TRC should be implemented. We will not support it, and I personally, I will not support it.
Mr. Deputy Speaker, the President says that while the selection of qualified individuals to serve on the Independent National Human Rights Commission is in process, that she has requested the Law Reform Commission to work with the Ministry of Justice to consider all legal implications, including the Constitution and relevant statutes, regarding the implementation of the TRC recommendations.
There's nothing in the TRC Act to talk about a Law Reform Commission. So there's nothing there. So for reason, what I'm saying is that we should look at the TRC report and treat it with respect and to be able to start implementing the report. What we cannot, we can go back to the Parliament House and have a discussion there. This is my message to all Liberians.
Tukpa Molba is Deputy Speaker of Liberia's House of Representatives. Information Minister Cletus Sia says the Deputy Speaker should concentrate on making the laws while President Sirleaf executes and the judiciary interprets the laws.
The TRC Act says the President should make a report. The President have abide by that particular clause in the TRC Act. The president has made a report. She will make the next report in 90 days' time. The president has reported, and that's it.
The argument that the deputy speaker makes is that the TRC Act does not give her the right to organize or to put together a law reform commission to review the legality of some of the recommendations in the TRC report.
With due respect to the deputy speaker, he is one responsible to make laws. There are those charged with the responsibility of interpreting the laws, and that right is reserved for the judiciary branch of government. He should concentrate on making the laws. The president will execute, the judiciary will interpret. That's how our country works.
Liberia's Information Minister Cletus Sia was speaking with reporter James Butte from the capital, Monrovia. Daybreak time is 15 and a half past the hour. You're tuned to the Voice of America. Kenya has welcomed a decision by the Convention on International Trade and Endangered Species to prevent neighboring Tanzania from selling part of its ivory stockpile. Mike Sunderland in Nairobi tells the Voice of America the Kenyan government says putting ivory back on the market would stimulate illegal poaching in the region.
Speaking to VOA, Kenya Wildlife spokesman Paul Adotu said the decision would help to ensure the continuation of one of Africa's most important conservation efforts.
It's really a victory for the African elephant. It's also an opportunity for Kenya and like-minded partners to engage the other side of the argument.
Kenya was one of more than 20 countries from eastern Central Africa that rallied against a proposal from Tanzania and Zambia to remove the African elephant from a list of endangered species. The proposed change would have allowed the two countries to make a one-time sale of more than 100 tons of ivory, the profits of which they said would be used to fund further conservation projects. Elephants can move freely across the border between Kenya and Tanzania at three main points where wildlife reserves straddle both countries. Adotu argues that no decision regarding animal welfare in those regions should be made without consultation between the two nations.
They are shared populations. The elephants have no idea about the passports and visas to cross over. And it was upon the two countries to have discussed this issue before being presented to Doha. It's unfortunate that Tanzania moved ahead and took this to Doha without agreeing with us.
Experts say an insatiable demand for ivory from the Far East means many African countries are facing serious problems in controlling illegal poaching. Speaking to VOA from the CITES summit in Doha, Save the Elephants founder Ian Douglas Hamilton said authorities must act to ensure all options stay closed to ivory buyers.
If the price of ivory is propelled upwards due to the increased demand from the Far East, the poaching will definitely escalate. And I think Kenya is really fearful that one-off sales at the moment would stimulate the market and increase the demand. And that would definitely feed back down to increase the ivory poaching.
Douglas Hamilton says the 1989 worldwide ban on ivory trade initially led to an increase in most significant elephant populations, a trend that continued until a few years ago.
Now what worries us is that we see a sudden escalation in poaching levels. Everybody acknowledges that throughout the CITES family. That's why we're particularly worried there could be a return to the bad old days.
The Kenyan government has called for Tanzania and other East African states to reconvene to reaffirm the provisions that were made during the last CITES conference in 2007, when a nine-year moratorium on ivory trade was agreed to. Douglas Hamilton says the most important aspect of this year's decision is that more time will be made for monitoring systems to be put in place, and that elephants will be granted a rest period so that numbers can increase again. Mike Sunderland for VOA News, Nairobi.
Listener mail and the Daybreak Sports Report are up ahead on Daybreak Africa, so stay tuned. Voice of America time is 19 minutes past the hour. The World Health Organization has taken the occasion of yesterday's observance of World TB Day to document the progress and challenges in its fight against tuberculosis. While the number of tuberculosis cases is slowly decreasing, the WHO says new strains of drug-resistant TB are on the rise. The countries with the most cases are India, China, the Russian Federation, South Africa, and Bangladesh. Health officials say already 1.8 million people die each year of tuberculosis. They warn that if the trend toward multi-drug-resistant TB is not reversed, more people will die of the disease. The Voice of America's Elizabeth Lee has this report.
Tuberculosis is a highly contagious disease that attacks the lungs and kills thousands of people every day around the world.
We are talking here about a tragedy that is unfolding every single day. By the end of the day, 5,000 people will be dead.
Ernesto Jaramillo of the World Health Organization says while tuberculosis is a curable disease, people are dying from new strains of the bacteria that is resistant to drugs. Every year, 440,000 new cases of multi-drug-resistant TB are diagnosed. Half of those cases come from China and India, and those are just the known cases. The Center for Global Health Policy, a U.S. advocacy group, says the majority of people with drug-resistant TB are never diagnosed or treated. For patients who do get treatment, the chances of being cured if infected with drug-resistant TB is only 30 to 60%.
You've lost many of the drugs that normally would be used to treat TB, so it becomes very difficult to treat.
Dr. Celine Gounder of the health organization CREATE says the appearance of drug-resistant TB is due to weak healthcare systems or a lack of patient education. She says in countries with little TB education, patients often don't finish the full course of antibiotics or they take the drugs incorrectly.
For example, India, you can buy TB medications from your local pharmacy. And so patients may not take the correct mix of medications for the right period of time, and that also contributes to drug resistance.
The World Health Organization says the rise in drug-resistant TB can be reversed.
The major force behind the epidemic is lack of investment in basic TB control and a reflection of major weaknesses in the healthcare systems.
In a new report, the U.S. government is calling TB a global health emergency. It aims to reduce the number of TB deaths and ramp up diagnosis and treatment around the world by 2014. U.S. health organizations are calling on Congress to provide more funding to support international efforts to control TB. They say when the U.S. acts, other countries will follow. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
It's 22 past the hour on Daybreak Africa. The United Nations has named 2010 the year of biodiversity. Britain's Kew Gardens, one of the oldest and most respected botanical gardens in the world, is at the forefront of preserving biodiversity. Jennifer Glass went behind the scenes at Kew and has this report for the Voice of America.
Kew Royal Botanical Gardens on the outskirts of London has been around for 250 years and is home to some of the world's largest collections of plant specimens. Here, experts study how to germinate plants, their history, their relationship with other plants, insects, and animals, and their place in the world. Mark Chase heads Kew's Jodrell Laboratory, where much of the work is done. He says understanding plants is useful in tackling 21st century problems like climate change.
Plants can purify the water, modify the temperatures, and modify our habitats, and make these more hospitable for people. So if we can restore areas that have been damaged by our past activities, then this will help ameliorate the effects of climate change on us.
Chase says plant effects are easy to see.
Just walk out on a summer's day and stand near a tree versus standing out away someplace where there are no trees, and you can feel the cooling effects of the transpiration, the loss of water through the leaves that's taking place as a result of the presence of the trees.
In Africa, Kew's botanists are working with local populations to identify and, in some cases, preserve plant species that are threatened. Monique Simmons heads the Sustainable Uses of Plants group at Kew.
Plant habitats are really facing severe pressures on them with changing land use, with increasing populations, etc. The need to feed people, be able to provide fuel, results in a loss of habitat and therefore the loss of biodiversity.
Simmons says change in habitat is threatening plants that could lead to medical breakthroughs. In Ghana, experts from Kew are helping identify plants that could be used to treat malaria. Simmons says there's no magic bean yet, but there's hope.
It's maybe about time that we had a lead from Africa, and we're hoping that this research will result in this. I'm afraid it does take years to actually identify a plant with that potential. But the fact that we are identifying plants that haven't yet been studied indicates that there is new information out there that justifies further research.
Simmons says her team works closely with a local community to ensure its scientists learn from their indigenous plants and will benefit if the plans turn out to have commercial value. Jennifer Glass for VOA News, London.
At 25 past the hour, we go to Daybreak Sports. Mark Ouma is in Johannesburg. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Howard. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Africa champion Louis van Zyl of South Africa clocked a season best of 49.45 seconds to emerge victorious in the 400-meter hurdles at the Yellow Pages track and field meet here in Johannesburg on Wednesday night. Other notable victories came from South Africans Tumelo Tagane, who leaped to a distance of 16.78 meters in the triple jump, Jonas Windies, 1 minute and 46.77 seconds in 800 meters, and 17-year-old Rikenet Steenkamp, who won the women's 100-meter hurdles in 13.61 seconds. Moving on to Nigeria. The newly introduced Nigeria Golden League Series gets underway at the Amadou Bello Stadium in Kaduna, northern Nigeria, tomorrow Friday. Besides qualifying for the Africa Championships and the Commonwealth Games, athletes will be vying for the jackpot prize of over $6,000. Athletics Federation of Nigeria Secretary General Maria Wopil explains that the top three athletes in each event earn prize money, but that to win the golden jackpot prize, an athlete must win their event at five of the six meet series. Other meets in the series take place in Ilaro in Ogun State, Lagos, Makurdi, Owerri in Imo State, and Warri in Delta State. Moving on to tennis. Nigerian Sports Minister Alhaji Sani Ndanusa has assured that adequate security is in place for all players and officials going to the Nigerian capital, Abuja, for the Africa Junior Tennis Championships. The minister's assurance comes in the wake of the recent reports of insecurity in the state of Jos that grabbed worldwide media attention. The contest starts on Sunday and lasts a fortnight. In golf news, Kenya Open Golf Championship starts at Nairobi's Muthaiga Golf Club today, Thursday. The four-day contest has attracted the finest in the sport from Namibia, Nigeria, Rwanda, South Africa, Uganda, Zimbabwe, host Kenya, and about 100 golfers from the European Challenge Tour. Finally, in football, a 48-year-old Hamza Yusuf of Moyo in northern Uganda has won the fourth furnished house in the ongoing MTN 2010 World Cup Goal for Goals promotion in Namungona on the outskirts of the Ugandan capital, Kampala, on Wednesday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Over to you, Howard, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. In the Daybreak listener mailbag, comments from William Kokulo of Monrovia, Liberia, who writes, I commend the leaders' meeting in Monrovia for the ECOWAS summit. Looking back a few years ago and recounting the effort of ECOWAS troops in Sierra Leone and Liberia fighting to restore peace and democracy in the region, I believe ECOWAS is one of the best organized regional groupings that is held together and has the dream of making West Africa a violence-free society. I want to condemn the beating of journalist Petra Fon by President Sirleaf Security during the opening session of ECOWAS Summit. I believe the action by the state security was deliberate and an attempt to stop free movement of the press, as it was reflected in the U.S. State Department report on Liberia a few weeks ago. I hope the Press Union of Liberia intervenes and addresses the situation now. Thanks for your comments. William Kokulo of Monrovia, send your comments to us at daybreakafrica at voanews.com or phone us with a voicemail at 202-205-9942. In the headlines, the European Union has given Zimbabwe $10.6 million to buy primary school textbooks toward reviving the country's education system. That's it for Daybreak. I'm Howard Lesser. Have a great day.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcast. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com. Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all.
tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.